This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time 12:03. Welcome to the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. I'm Jim Goodis in for Cisco Cotto. Let's kick things off on today's WBBM Noon Business Hour with a look at home prices on the rise while construction spending up a tick. And we're joined by Joel Naroff, the president of Naroff Economics in Holland, Pennsylvania. So let's talk about why, when so many other things seem to be struggling, home prices don't appear to be one of them.
Well, what we're looking at is a real change in the attitude towards housing. That's in no small part a result of the pandemic. I think what we're seeing is that, first of all, mortgage rates are extraordinarily low, and that's very advantageous to potential buyers. But I think even more importantly, for those people who have their jobs, who haven't lost their jobs and have the income, it's not just the low mortgages, but the idea that this is actually a good time for them to get off of the fence. You know, in the typical market, a lot of people just wander around, you know, and look but don't decide. Here, especially with people making a decision to potentially get out of densely populated areas into less densely populated areas, this has made housing really popular, increased demand, and that's why prices are going up quite sharply.
So it's not just the low rates. There are a lot of other factors involved here. And is it going to continue to be a good time to buy, or is it really time to get off the fence and buy now because this might not last?
Well, obviously, if it's not going to last, that just simply means that prices might ease as we go forward. This may be a temporary surge, but I don't think that's necessarily the case here. I think we have a short-term surge as a reaction to people saying, you know, I don't want to live in a high-density area anymore. But mortgage rates, if you believe the Fed, are going to stay really low, maybe not this low, but really low for an extended period of time. So there'll be opportunities. The rates may go up, but they're going to go up slowly once they go up. So the opportunities on the financing side are going to be there. The question is, and the problem for buyers is that the inventory is just not there. And that's part of the reason prices are soaring, is that, you know, while people may want to buy in the suburbs, not everybody in the suburbs wants to sell at this point.
All the indicators, it sounds like, seem to be pointing in at least a positive direction, or at least holding steady. Is there anything besides inventory that you see that could upend all of this?
Well, at this point, you know, the real issue is, you know, can we sustain the recovery at the pace we're starting to see it move? We had a terrible second quarter. It looks like the summer was really, really great. But part of that was, you know, driven by the government spending huge amounts of money. A lot of that is disappearing. So we've got to take a look at what happened in August and especially September to see the shape of the economy. And under those sets of circumstances, I think we may see a slowdown in the housing market, not a collapse by any means, but a slowdown in it. And part of that is signaled by the fact that consumer confidence is just not strong right now. People are uncertain, and without consumers feeling good about the future as well as the present, then I'm not sure this kind of short-term bubble we're seeing in the housing market will be necessarily sustained.
All right, that's Joel Naroff, who is the president of Naroff Economics in Holland, Pennsylvania. Coming up, why the holiday weekend that's coming up could be critical in the battle against the coronavirus.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
America's leading infectious disease expert is issuing a COVID-related warning ahead of Labor Day, while New York City delays the opening of school classrooms. And we're joined by Michelle Cortez, the health reporter from Bloomberg News in Minneapolis. So, Michelle, what are the concerns from Dr. Fauci and others about Labor Day weekend and COVID-19?
After July 4th and after the earlier holidays this summer, that there was an increased number of coronavirus cases that came out. So Dr. Fauci is really just kind of signaling, sounding the warning, telling Americans that we really need to be careful this one last time. Wear your mask, social distance, don't be, you know, in close contact and unprotected with other people, because we're going into the fall and soon to come winter months, and we're going to be facing more coronavirus, and we need to get off on a good start.
We've heard this message so many times. Is there concern that we're getting into precaution fatigue, that people are kind of like, well, you know, I don't really need to wear a mask, I'm just going to pop in here, or, you know, I'm not too concerned, that person doesn't look sick, so I won't necessarily maintain social distance. How much of that is a factor, especially as we're starting to head into a weekend where you might do more activities with more people?
Jim, everyone is tired of coronavirus. There is not anyone, I'm sure, in the entire world who is okay with the situation that we're in still. The challenge is going to be that it is going to be worse, as you pointed out. And also, we're in a point where things seem to be kind of manageable at this point. There's not any hospital systems that are being overwhelmed. We're not getting reports of people who, you know, can't get on a ventilator. And it seems like it's a little bit manageable. So I think that people, combined with the fatigue of the warnings that, as you pointed out, and the idea that it's not as bad as people maybe say, that we're kind of ripe for getting off on the wrong foot. And I think that that's what Dr. Fauci is warning against.
What's the latest on a vaccine? Anything new to report?
So, yeah, we actually are having breaking news just as we're speaking, where the National Institutes of Health is starting to roll out some of the details on how they're going to be making the vaccine available. There aren't a lot of huge surprises here, in that they are saying that first it's going to go to healthcare providers and then to high-risk people like nursing homes. But that is, it does raise some new questions, because amid all the questions about how scientifically valid and rushed perhaps is a vaccine going to be, it's going to be the frontline healthcare providers who are going to be making this decision on whether or not they're going to be getting a vaccine that would protect themselves and their patients theoretically from the virus. So if they believe in it, are they going to actually be doing it? So that's an interesting point. On the flip side, people who are saying, let's just wait for a couple of months and we'll open our schools once we have a vaccine, once the teachers can get it, once the students can get it. The idea that that's going to happen anytime soon is falling further and further by the wayside, because as the healthcare providers, as the high-risk patients are going to be getting these initial doses, there's just not going to be enough.
Michelle Cortez, health reporter from Bloomberg News in Minneapolis. Always great to get your perspective on what's going on, especially these days. Up next, Walmart makes Amazon a prime target.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Walmart is set to launch a new membership service that's designed to compete with Amazon Prime. And let's get the details from Ken Perkins, the research analyst at Retail Metrics in Swampscott, Massachusetts. So, Ken, let's talk about this new Walmart service. What's it about, and how does it intend to compete with Amazon?
Yeah, it's a reiteration of one of their previous services, but with a few upgrades. The new program is going to be $98 a month. $98 a year, excuse me, $20 cheaper than the Amazon Prime price point. It's going to offer unlimited free delivery for both general merchandise and grocery merchandise orders of $35 or more. It's going to offer some gas discounts at local gas stations at their stores, as well as Murphy USA and Murphy Express. And it's going to allow the consumers to use their Scan and Go feature, which had been an app that they had discontinued in the Walmart stores, but now they're bringing it back. So it'll expedite their ability to check out and not have to stand in line. So another reiteration of contactless payments. It still comes up a bit short relative to Amazon Prime in terms of its overall offerings. You know, only 160,000 items are going to be on available for the program, compared to you know, several million for Amazon. So it's also not going to be including free streaming music and the video library that Amazon provides as well. So they have a bit of a ways to go, but it's definitely a good start.
Is the price difference enough to make enough of a dent in Prime, which does have a bit of market saturation? Do you think people would be willing to consider being members of both, or is that an issue?
Yeah, I think consumers that are, you know, currently Prime members are more likely to be willing to do both because of the convenience that Walmart and the pricing it offers on the grocery and general merchandise side. So I think that's more likely than Walmart luring people away on their price point. You know, Walmart's e-commerce sales were up 97% in the second quarter. They brought in millions of new customers through the pandemic as consumers found them very easy to shop, and they were always in stock on key items. So I think what they're really trying to do here is to leverage those new customers that they brought in with this loyalty program, keep them in the fold with it and allow them to buy their groceries and their basic essentials, their toilet paper, paper towels, personal care items from Walmart, and keep them coming back routinely. And I think that's what it's more geared toward than the direct competition with Amazon. I think over time they'll try to add more features to it to make it more competitive with Amazon, but I think initially they're really focusing on this new customer that they brought in.
Ken Perkins, who is the research analyst at Retail Metrics in Swampscott, Massachusetts. As always, great perspective on this. And coming up on Travel Tuesday, why the airline industry may need to shrink as a matter of survival.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, Francisco Cotto. I'm Jim Gooders. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Trump lands in Illinois on his way to Kenosha. A police shooting in Chicago leaves a man dead. On Travel Tuesday, the huge drop in airline demand could leave the industry with fewer players. The pandemic is straining many household budgets. We'll look at ways to make sure you don't default on your credit cards. On Wall Street right now, still a positive day on Wall Street. The Dow up 59, the S&P 500 up 12, and the Nasdaq's ahead by 131 points. Again, off and on rain expected throughout the afternoon and evening, heading up to a high of 79, down to a low of 68. Right now, under cloudy skies, it's 73 at O'Hare. WBBM News Time, 12:31. President Trump is visiting Kenosha, Wisconsin this afternoon. We get the latest from CBS White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy.
The president says he expects his visit will increase love, not tensions. When asked by reporters whether he'd meet with Wisconsin's Democratic governor, Mr. Trump said he might.
Today I'm there for law enforcement and for the National Guard because they've done a great job in Kenosha. They put out the flame immediately.
The president is also expected to meet with business owners who saw their property burn. Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, Washington.
An exchange of gunfire between a group of suspects and police in the Pilsen neighborhood last night has left a person dead.
Police say the exchange of gunfire happened shortly before 11 o'clock last night in the 1300 block of West 19th Street. According to Deputy Chief Daniel O'Shea, officers had been responding to a report of a suspicious person and that as they were getting out of their squad, shots were fired at them. They shot back, hitting one person in the back of the head. No officers were injured. The wounded person was taken to Stroger Hospital in critical condition and later died. Two others were taken into custody, and a couple of people got away. Police say they confiscated the alleged shooter's weapon. The officers were placed on administrative duty for the next month, which is standard procedure while the shooting is investigated. Bernie Tafoya, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
If you're working remotely or anytime you're home, just ask your smart speaker to play WBBM for all the latest developments. Back to the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. And stocks are higher at this noon hour, and we're joined by Michael Palumbo, the founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk in Chicago. So, Mike, let's talk first about why we're seeing another up day on Wall Street today.
Well, good afternoon, Jim, and thanks for having me on. I mean, we're up today because the market's open, and that basically is all you need these days to get the market to go up. Honestly, kidding aside, there's not a lot of news, but there were some individual company news items and some great earnings. So that might be driving some of this. The NASDAQ is leading, as usual, and the stock that really is soaring is in the NASDAQ. So that's probably what is driving some of this. But yeah, the trend is your friend, and the trend is up right now.
And tech is avoiding the wreck. It just seems to continue to be pulling at least the indices along.
Yeah, incredibly. So Zoom came out with earnings last night, and they're the ones really that are causing a lot of this rise in the NASDAQ. The stock's up 40%, and it's an incredible story.
Well, let's talk about Zoom. And I guess, you know, obviously circumstances suggest that more and more people who need longer and longer meetings are going to be more and more likely to sign up for the paid service. But is this something that's sustainable? Apparently, investors think so.
Well, here's the thing. It's a properly named stock, certainly for how it's been performing. It's up over 500% this year. We all know about, most people know about Zoom and what it does, and it's definitely benefited from COVID. But I really think the real story here and the takeaway is that this type of conferencing is going to probably stick even after COVID is gone, because people have become used to it. They see how easy it is to do. And then the days of people flying 4 hours for an in-person meeting with the money and the time expense when you can just Zoom conference, it's just going to make that, you know, be more of an everyday fact of life. And, you know, anytime you have a company have a name that actually becomes a noun or verb, like Uber does, you know, you Uber somewhere, now you Zoom someone. I mean, that's always a good sign that that's got massive market acceptance, and it has. So you just see people now making Zoom meetings, and a year from now, if COVID is gone, I think that's still going to be happening. That's certainly what the stock is telling us, and that's what investors seem to believe. I think that's a very valid response and a very valid takeaway from the stock.
And Mike, what's up with Tesla?
So Tesla just it goes up every day except for today. But you know, it just had a 5-for-1 stock split, and the reason why it's down slightly today is they announced that they're going to have an at-the-market offering of $5 billion worth of stock. Now that used to be a big amount of money to Tesla, but now Tesla's market cap is $450 billion. So a $5 billion offering is 1% of the stock. It's really not that meaningful, but it does have the stock down 2%. But I mean, it's up 5x this year. So another one of those soaring stocks for the year. And if you look at its market cap, $450 billion, you could add Toyota, Daimler, GM, Ford, Honda, and Volkswagen together, and that does not equal Tesla. It's just incredible. And so if I'm Elon Musk, and I wish I was, at least I wish I had his bank account, you know, I would offer stock here. I mean, the stock has soared. So getting $5 billion off at this time makes total sense.
Any concern that it's overvalued?
Oh, there's a lot of concern it's overvalued. It's hard to even figure out how to compare it. So that's why I broke it down for you guys versus other car companies, because it's becoming bigger than all the other car companies combined. You can't really even look at PEs or things like that. You actually have to just look at how big of a market there will be for Tesla products what will that mean for sales. So, you know, if you believe that Tesla's battery technology, its self-driving technology, all those things are going to be an industry standard, and many do believe that, then this valuation could be true. It's just, will that really play out? And if so, then I could see the stock going higher. But there's certainly ways that this could fall apart. I mean, if other competitors come up with better battery technology, then Tesla could be in for some trouble. But right now, you don't see that on the horizon.
Michael Palumbo, the founder of NJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk, with a look at what may or may not be ahead for Tesla. Up next on Travel Tuesday, a dire forecast for the future of the U.S. airline industry.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday, and the executive chairman of United Airlines believes the industry may need to downsize by as much as 50% to survive. Let's get the perspective of Ken Goldstein, president KJG International Consulting in Chicago. And Ken, you think that's where we're headed? We might see an airline industry that's half of its previous size?
Well, there's a good possibility that, thanks for having me on, Jim. But the big concern is this. You got to remember, at 9/11, we had 9 major airlines. Today, we are down to 4. Oscar Munoz, the chairman, executive chairman of United, basically said is, hey, there's a good chance with this pandemic going on the way it is, not only are we going to cut ourselves in half, but the airline number may, in fact, be decreased. And there's a good chance of all this happening. Remember, the end of this month is when the CARES program or the assistance program for the airlines goes out. And United is talking of 36 possible layoffs by the fall. That's coming. American has basically said 19,000 people may be gone by 10/1. So you're talking of airlines that had been one size, literally being miniatures of themselves as we come to this point in time. The greater concern to look at is you got to remember the economic cycle for the airlines. They're going into their worst period of time. The fourth quarter and the first quarter of the year are the worst time for them. Their best time has, of course, been the summer, and that was decimated by the pandemic. Plus, the fact is business, which pays for a big percentage of that aircraft flying, people aren't flying. They're doing Zoom conferences. They're doing other things. And the long and short is the concern is many Americans simply have nowhere to go with vacations and business trips called off, and others are deterred by the fact that restrictions going into places, like Americans can't necessarily go to other places overseas without being quarantined or there's no flights there, they can't do things. So there's a big concern. There's a lot of truth to what he says.
Let me ask you this. Are we looking more at just smaller airlines? Are we looking more at consolidation, or are we looking at some failures, some airlines that just are going to have to go under?
Well, you know, let's start the last part of your question first, and that's I think the airlines are an economic necessity for us to continue, and the old adage, they're too big to fail. So I think what you'll see is somewhere between now and the end of the month, Congress and the administration will get together and get some type of package to try to keep them going. Plus, another thing to consider, although the airlines are cutting off services to certain places, they're governed by the fact that there are certain places they can't stop flying to because there are government subsidies. And these smaller communities rely on aircraft to do this, or the airlines to do that. So in the short term, I think you're going to see a lot of pain. Long term, hopefully, once we get to the fact that you have a herd immunity and the fact that the airlines themselves can get people flying and the vaccine is there and people feel comfortable about it, we should be all right. Plus, you need a uniformity at airports to start taking temperatures. You know, by and large, flying an airplane is not, it's safe. The problem is you get the problem, a person getting on board an airplane takes his mask off, and everything gets on that, and you see this, and that takes like one step forward and 5 steps back. So those are the big concerns you've got.
Ken Goldstein, the president of KJG International Consulting here in Chicago. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, keeping your credit card record clean in tough financial times.
Money Talks, as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The economic strain of the pandemic is forcing some people to lean on their credit cards, but getting in too deep can create a financial hole. And we welcome Ted Rossman of creditcards.com in New York. And Ted, it almost seems impossible for many of us to not at least look at our credit cards as kind of a brace or something, you know, with so many out of work or underworking or having a spouse or a significant other who isn't working. So how do we kind of keep this under control and not let it get out of hand, even though, you know, in some cases it's really tempting and maybe even necessary to at least lean much more on credit cards than we did before?
Hey, Jim, my top tip, if you're struggling with your credit card debt, is to speak up. Let your card issuer know there's a good chance they can cut you a break. So maybe they can let you skip a payment or more, sometimes even without interest. Or maybe they can lower that interest rate or waive some other fees. The good news is that all of these lender-permissioned programs will protect your credit score. So if you pay less or you pay late with permission, and that's the key, it's not going to hurt your credit.
Now, You can't do that too much, though, because obviously the longer you prolong a payment or you keep the principal there, the interest builds. Even if you do get a break on the interest now, eventually long term, that's an issue, isn't it? So is there other things you should do to kind of just as best you can try to keep control on it or at least not let it get out of hand?
Eventually, you've got to pay it off. That's right. So, 6 months ago, I would have said, get a 0% balance transfer credit card or go get a personal loan for debt consolidation. Those are unsecured debts that often carry interest rates as low as about 6 or 7%. The thing is that lenders have gotten a lot more risk averse during the pandemic, and it's hard to get a new balance transfer card or a new personal loan these days. Now, maybe you can if you have a good credit score. Probably at least 700, ideally 740 plus for the best odds of success. If you can't get one of those, you might want to look into one of these hybrid programs that you have on your existing credit card. So it's kind of like a credit card. It's kind of a personal loan. Some of the brand names include Amex Pay at Planet from American Express, or Citi calls it Citi Flex Pay. Chase calls it either My Chase Plan or My Chase Loan. There's a couple of different versions of this. One form will actually give you a lump sum at a lower interest rate, maybe something like 7 to 10% that you can use to consolidate and pay off debt. There's another flavor of it, which is more about installment debt for paying off a big purchase. And again, the pro is that it's easier to qualify because you've already got a foothold with that company, and it's going to be a lower interest rate, 7 to 10% instead of 16 to 20%.
Because the companies realize that it's better for them if you're able to maintain, somewhat financial health, even in tough times, so that you could remain a paying customer and not get to the point where you can't pay your bill at all. And that's not good for them either.
Exactly. And that's where these hardship programs are part goodwill, but also part practical. As you said, they'd rather get some of your money than none of it. That's why they're willing to work out a payment plan. That's part of why they have these hybrid programs. It's also kind of their answer to the personal loan industry and also the buy now, pay later companies like Affirm and Afterpay and Klarna and that whole group. One other thing I wanted to mention here is nonprofit credit counseling. This is a good avenue for people, especially if you owe, let's say, $5,000 or more on your cards. They can be a form of great advice, debt consolidation, lower interest rates, a single monthly payment. If you can't do it yourself with a personal loan or a balance transfer card, a nonprofit credit counselor like those accredited by the NFCC can help you do it.
Ted Rossman, great ideas, great advice, and great suggestions for people to help them deal with responsible credit as they deal with tough economic times, a lot of us, with creditcards.com in New York. If you missed any part of today's show, you could go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind button that works both online and with the radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.